Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode, and today we're going to be continuing to look at the Superman title from Brian Michael Bendis. He is the writer. We have pencils by a couple of people here. Yvonne Rice does pages 1 through 7 and page 15 for pencils. Brandon Peterson handles the art for pages 18 through 14, 16 through 22. Joe Prado does inks for 1 through 5 and 7. And then Eau Claire Albert does inks for page 6 and 15. Alex Sinclair handles all the colors. And we have Josh Reed on letters. There's a pretty cool Rice Prado Sinclair cover. And there is a Rob Liefeld cover. So if you're ever curious what it would look like if Rob Liefeld drew Superman, then I guess you need to track this cover down. I'll just say that it's not the worst drawing I've seen Liefeld do, but not particularly a fan. Don't care for Liefeld's rendering of Superman. He just looks like pretty much every character Liefeld draws, especially the face. Hair didn't do it for me either. It's a little too short. The other cover though, the Reese cover, Rice cover rather, is, yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, we're getting Wrath of the Crime Syndicate, like we got hinted at the end of issue 8. It is John Kent taking on the Crime Syndicate, or at least that's what it looks like. It looks like actually Jor-El and John Kent, and they're surrounded by, we see Ultraman in the background. Power Ring is there. Superwoman is there. Owlman in the foreground. Johnny Quick. So you think, oh, maybe an epic battle between these two Kryptonians and the Crime Syndicate, but not exactly how it quite goes down. And in fact, it's pretty confusing if even if you've been reading this book every issue, when you open up the front page and you see a Superman standing there sort of in a bit of a trance, voice off panel says dad, and then we get a look at Lois Lane dressed in some ridiculous Super Lois costume. John Kent is there, but he's missing one of his eyes and has this patch over it. He also has apparently some sort of robotic arm, and there's a girl there saying, everyone's waiting, dad. So clearly this is far in the future. John has been hurt extensively, missing an eye and an arm, and Lois and Clark apparently have a daughter now. And so as they exit what clearly is the Fortress of Solitude with Kara joining them, Supergirl, what we see is as we turn to the title page, they're about to celebrate World Peace Day. And we see in the background all these people who have come to celebrate. And again, adding to the idea that it's far in the future, Jimmy Olsen is there pretty close in the foreground with who I assume is his wife and a little kid. The Bat family is much bigger. Wonder Woman apparently has a kid or two. So apparently Superman has achieved his dream, right, of peace. And see a few buildings in the background. It's not real clear, but it does look to be in the future. And as they're standing there, all of a sudden the House of Zod shows up, and with Zod saying, House of Zod has come to pay their respects. I hope that it inspires our houses to find peace in the galaxy as well. Before Superman can even respond, there's some shadows, and out of the sun, it looks like there's a bunch of people attacking. So who that might be, we don't know. What the heck is going on, we don't know. And you know, before anything can be explained, we turn the page, and all of a sudden we see Superman saying, Jimmy. And again, off panel, John saying, Dad, and Lois is like, Smallville, you there? You got me kind of freaked out. And then Superman says, oh no, I'm sorry, John, Lois. And Lois like, you haven't slept, have you? He says, well, I forgot to, right? I lived on Krypton. I'd have normal sleep cycles, you know, whatever that was, but you know, yellow sun on Earth gives us our powers, makes I don't have to sleep. Even though I clearly do, he says. And John Kent's like, yeah, I was going to say, and again, all this dialogue is just so clunky and it just doesn't seem to be a reason for it. Superman goes on to say something about Batman says it's my subconscious screaming for stage time when apparently I have these, I don't know, hallucinations, I guess he's having these visions. Where does this come from? What does he have all of a sudden a new power that he can see the future? or potential futures. Like, what? This is dangerous if he's just spacing out and, you know, literally having hallucinations. That's what a hallucination is, seeing something that's not there. So it's just, again, super clunky. And that even leads to Lois in the most clunky dialogue, perhaps, of the entire issue. Oh, let's get everybody caught up now. Let's remind them where they were, since I just distracted you with two or three pages of complete nonsense that doesn't mean, like, are you hinting at a future storyline, Bendis? Is that what you're doing? Because it just seems silly to just randomly throw this in there. And like, what you like, I just don't get it. What was the point of wasting these pages? It really just makes no sense. But anyway, back to Lois's clunky dialogue. Okay, honey, our son is back on home, or is back home on Earth after a few weeks away with his grandfather, but a few years older, and now he's right in the middle of telling us how that could possibly be. So I really need you front and center. And it's like, wait, what? Like, who talks like that, right? Superman knows what's going on. Clark knows what's going on. He's been there. Why would she just not say, you know, we're talking, we need to pay attention, first of all. And second of all, the last issue ended with John telling us that he had landed at the feet of the crime syndicate on Earth 3. And so, you know, this is supposed to follow only moments later, I'm assuming. And so he's zoned out just in those couple seconds. Okay, I guess. As scary as that is, Superman having hallucinations. But do you think just a few seconds later, a few minutes later, if you want to, you know, say a huge amount of time went by, like that can't be more than a few minutes, though, that Lois is going to have to remind him of all this stuff? Hey, yeah, he was gone for only a few weeks in our lives, but years for him. Like, it's just, you know, people talk about Bendis being great at dialogue, and then you read this kind of scripting, and I don't know. You know, I've never been a big fan of Bendis. I've said that repeatedly, but supposedly he was a good writer at some point. I mean, he wouldn't have the reputation he has and be as popular as he is and have you know, a solid fan base if he wasn't. I gotta think that. I mean, I haven't really read anything from him that I've thought was above average, but I mean, the reputation has to come from somewhere, right? That's what I keep thinking. I keep waiting for the shoe to drop and for something to be good. And I haven't seen it yet. It's so frustrating. But anyway, there's a little more back and forth about how great the food is now at the new Fortress of Solitude, since, you know, we saw in the Bendis's Man of Steel miniseries that Superman moved it to Bermuda from the North Pole, and about how long it's been since John had anything to eat. And he kind of apologizes for scarfing the food down. They say, oh, that's okay. We're just glad you're home. And he says, well, that's not true. Lois says, well, no, that's not true. You're years older and I'm beside myself. But, you know, let's not focus on that right now. Let's talk about what you had just said about going to another dimension or another planet. And John says, yeah, you know what I'm talking about, right, Dad? And Superman says, yeah, from what he described, another Earth and not the best one. And John kind of confirms that. He says, no. And before he can say more, Superman says, yeah, I know that Earth, and I know it's cruelly ruled by those that call themselves the Crime Syndicate. And John says, yeah, that's them. And he talks about how morally bankrupt they are. Or actually, it's Superman talking, I'm sorry. He says, yeah, the morally bankrupt, that world's answer to the Justice League. And they just like to win. They've devastated their own planet through using their powers and their twisted versions of the heroes of this Earth. And John basically landed at their feet. And John says, oh yeah, I definitely did. And they weren't happy to see me. And now, as we go through this narrative of John telling the story, this is where the art changes to the Brandon Peterson art. And basically what happens is Ultraman grabs him and actually uses his beams on his eye beams on I guess it's Deathstorm and an Owlman to keep them from grabbing John. And he says, mine, he's mine. And John's saying, just for the briefest second, I thought that it was you, that you'd come to save me. And I remember thinking, wait, how did he find me? How does he even know where I am? And we see that Ultraman takes him and drops him in the middle of a volcano. and says, I'm not going to beat you to death. There's no point to that. And I haven't really enjoyed that kind of thing since high school. How did you get here? And John says, wormhole. And he's like, wormhole, huh? Okay. And they start discussing alternate universes and things like that, with John telling his parents, yeah, I had to keep reminding myself that even though he looked like you and sounded like you, that it wasn't you, you know, that's not my dad. And as John's conversing with Ultraman, he even says, oh man, I'm in so much trouble when I get home. And Ultraman goes from sitting on a rock sort of across the way, you know, across the bottom of the volcano. He flies right up to John immediately and grabs him, tells him, get that idea out of your head right now. You're never going home. This is your home now. And again, we get some of that patented clunky dialogue from Bendis when John replies, listen, Jersey City version of my dad, I see you're getting all ready to drop some big drama on me, but I'm so not into it. What? Whoever says Jersey City version of whatever? No, I've never heard anybody say that ever in my whole life. Maybe it's because I don't live in the world of DC Comics, but that's not Jersey City version. No, that's not a thing, Bendis. I don't like whatever. It's just bad. That's all I can say. Anyway, Ultraman goes on. Hey kid, do the math. I'm stronger than you. I'm faster than you. Blah, blah, blah. Settle down. You're never leaving here. And then asks John if he's ever met any other versions of himself. And he says, yeah, not a fan. And Ultraman says, yeah, I get that. And there's no sun here. That's why I brought you here. That's why you feel the way you do and why I feel amazing. And then he says, you don't have any kryptonite on you, do you? Because that's part of what Ultraman uses. You know, it's kind of a broken mirror version of Superman. He's like snorts kryptonite and it makes him feel more powerful. And John's like, on me? No, I don't. And Ultraman again, and that's the clunky dialogue. Okay, just asking. Anyway, I'm going to get your Earth one of these days. So in the meantime, this is where you're going to live until I figure out what to do with you. You have one purpose, Super Dude. This happened for a reason, and I'm going to figure out why, and we're going to make the most of this. And he flies off. And so here's John trapped in this volcano. There's no sun to give him powers. And he tries to fly, and he gets like 2 feet off the ground. And he falls back. And he's like, uh-oh, I couldn't fly out. I couldn't climb out. I could barely breathe. I was stuck in a volcano prison. So, again, lazy writing. Why does John have no powers? I mean, the cells store the energy for a while. It takes a while for the powers to be used up. And John really hasn't used any of his powers since he landed at the feet of the crime syndicate. So why is he completely powerless? Because reasons, I guess. Again, it just doesn't make any sense. Because Bendis needs him to age him up, apparently. Like it's frustrating because it feels lazy. It doesn't make sense. And it's just not good. So anyway, he tells his parents, and we come to a page where we're back in present time. So we at least get some Ivan Rice art to look at. Not that the Brandon Peterson art is bad. It just, Brandon Peterson's art these days to me just looks really plastic looking. It's got this veneer where everybody looks like a Cupid doll. And I'm not, you know, not a big fan of it. It doesn't suit. And it also, the other part about doing it this way, and I'm sure it's to save Ivan Rice time because he's not the fastest artist. But when we had the scene where John was speaking to Ultraman and he was talking about how, yeah, he looked like my dad and it was freaking me out. Except in this book, they look nothing alike. Ultraman and Superman look absolutely nothing alike because you have two artists who have completely different styles drawing them, right? It would be way more effective had you had the same artist do at least that figure or at least that face so that they would look the same instead of them looking wildly different. And you're like, well, wait, Ultraman doesn't look anything like Clark. Why would John be saying that? I mean, obviously we know in the story they do look alike, but not here. So anyway, John goes on to say, yeah, I wouldn't see him for days, or at least I think it was days. There was no sunlight. So time's getting kind of weird. And Superman just keeps asking, "Wait, hold on. How long were you there?" And Lois and Clark look kind of distraught, and John interrupts his narrative. He's like, "You guys need to go hit something." And Superman says, "No, I'm saving that." And John's response is, "For Grandpa? Well, for starters, but how long? How long were you trapped, powerless in a volcano?" And John, you can see, doesn't really want to answer, right? He's like, I really thought Grandpa was going to come to save me, if he was alive, but there's no way he was going to come and at least look for me, or you were going to come. I mean, you're Superman. Eventually, it's you." Superman again, "How long?" And John doesn't really give him an answer. Instead, he goes back to talking about how it was in the volcano and says, "Yeah, every time that he came back to check on me, it became less about me after that first time and more about him. And then he would just kind of sit there. Sometimes he wouldn't even talk, but most of the time he did talk. And man, so much talking. Like he would just sit and talk, and like he had no one else to talk to. And I was a captive, and so captive audience, I suppose. And he's one of those guys that would repeat a story, same story that he told you last time, but he would change some things that weren't even really important to the story. But because he changes little things each time, the story's not real, or he's lying, so you can't trust anything the guy's saying. And it just, man, he would tell these long stories about his group of super people or his world's Lex Luthor, how bad his life was, and everybody was always challenging him, and nobody ever respected what he said or listened to him unless he was killing them. And after a while, sometimes he'd cry, he would blubber, and it was so awkward. And I'm like, again, I gotta wonder what's Bendis doing. Like, I get that you're trying to establish something here with Ultraman, but it's not really in character. And who are you to be laying this kind of psychological type thing on Ultraman when you're not even really telling an Ultraman story or developing narrative or character with him? You just throw this out there just for, again, reasons, I guess. I just don't see what it adds to the story other than John says, well, when he would cry, he would always get angry after he cried, and he would blame me for it, and he would fly off. But if he cried, I knew I wasn't going to see him for a longer time. So I guess there was that. So if I was ever going to make a break for it, it was going to have to be after a good Ultraman cry. And so we see that in the art here. John says it took me a while, maybe a little longer than I'm proud of, but we do see Ultraman flying away from the volcano, with the anguish look on his face. And John says, "Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how long I was there, but after seeing how the volcano reacted to Ultraman coming and going and his tantrums, I sort of figured it out. I was going to use whatever of my powers I had left, and I was going to try to cause a lava bomb and ride that explosion right out of there." And that's what we see him doing in the art here. He basically picks up a rock and slams it into the side of the volcano. At the same time, it's sort of reacting to Ultraman flying out. And John was saying, if it didn't work, it didn't work. But man, I was done listening to this guy blubber. We see a big explosion, and John is expelled, burns off all his clothes. And he says, "Yeah, it took time to heal. It wasn't fun, but it got me to the nearest town, which got me to Denver, which got me to the next city. And, I wouldn't say this to anybody else, mom, dad, but I was actually proud of myself. Like, I got out of there just like you guys would have. I found a way. And everywhere I went, there was trouble. Everywhere I went, somebody needed help. And because this was a world not used to helping each other, help wasn't always received well. But in my travels, I found out where I was and how long I was gone, even though they don't tell us, the reader. But he said, I figured the odds of you guys ever finding me were long. And I thought, well, you're never going to stop looking for me, but I need to see if I can find my own way home. And I was thinking, well, if the crime syndicate is this world's version of the Justice League, they have to have a Hall of Justice, right? A Hall of Justice has all kinds of crazy, technology in there. And maybe if I could get in there, it would give me a hint or a clue, at least a way to signal you how to get back home. And of course, now that I'm telling you the story and saying it out loud, I'm realizing that I had basically broken out of the world's most dangerous prison, only to break back into the fortified fortress of the people who put me there. Because as he's telling the story, we do see him breaking in or sneaking into the Hall of Justice. And once he gets in there, he he's telling his parents, but you know, I promise you in my head, it made total sense for me to go there. But once I got there, things weren't so great. And we turn to the last page of the story, and it's Lois Lane, who in the world of the crime syndicate is Superwoman. And some would say is more powerful, more dangerous, more evil, if you will, than Ultraman himself. And on that last page, John is laying there looking up at his mother saying, "Ma," and she responds, "What bleep you? I am Superwoman of the crime syndicate. And oh yeah, I remember you. You're the bleeping super kid from Planet Bleep. Ha, my husband didn't have the guts to do it." And we get the blurb that next we have Superboy versus his mother to the death. But again, it doesn't look anything like Lois because it's drawn by Brandon Peterson. And it might not look that much like Lois, even if Yvonne Rice had drawn it, because, you know, Superwoman is wearing a costume and has smoldering eyes from her heat vision that she just blasted John with. So that's it. That's issue 9. And in case you can't tell, I didn't care for it very much. And it's really disappointing because I really like the Crime Syndicate. But the other part of this is that when last we saw the Crime Syndicate in Forever Evil and then Geoff Johns' Dark Side War, they all died. And yet, with no explanation whatsoever, here they are back because reasons, I guess, because Bendis wanted to use them. I really don't know. I don't know because Bendis wanted to write Ultraman and make him a crybaby. Like, again, it's just, I hate to harp on how bad Bendis's Superman run has been, but it just feels lazy. It just feels lazy. And these characters don't feel, Clark doesn't feel like Clark. You know, Superman doesn't feel like Superman. Lois doesn't feel like Lois. Their voices are wrong. And when I say their voice, I mean, it's not even the clunky dialogue that he's putting in their mouths, just their characterization, who they are, the tone, their how they react to situations. It doesn't feel like any version of Superman that I've ever read. And I've been reading Superman for 35 years now, more, almost 40 years. So, I mean, there's been a lot of different, Superman's had a lot of different voices. Like, don't get me wrong. And I guess we're just adding another one to the mix. And I guess you can make the argument, well, shouldn't each writer bring something sort of unique and tell the story they want to tell? And I would agree with you on that. You know, I always tell everybody if you don't like something, you're free to not buy it. And I certainly have that choice. It just sucks because it's my favorite character. And I'm as much as it pains me as a comic book reader, as a comic book collector, I'm going to keep buying Superman and Action Comics, even though I didn't enjoy them when Bendis was writing them, because I have, you know, these huge runs that I want to keep going. So that's on me. That's the choice that I'm making. To buy them as a collectible, even if I'm not enjoying them as a story. But it is frustrating to have a writer. I mean, I was excited when I heard Bendis was coming. You know, anyway, again, I wasn't as familiar with his work as a lot of people are, just because I haven't read a lot of Marvel in the last, you know, 15 years. Probably the most of his work that I read was in Ultimate Spider-Man, and I thought it was okay, decompressed to an extreme, which I didn't like. But I at least thought, well, even though I thought Jurgens and Tomasi were doing a bang up job and Superman was and Action Comics were both really good, it's not up to me. And Bendis is coming whether I like it or not, but let's make the most of it and maybe he'll do something cool. And I've heard all these things, and but right from the start, you know, when he got rid of Lois and John and took them off the page and the way he brought Lois back. And then age John up. Like it just feel like he made mistake after mistake after mistake. And it's just frustrating. It just feels lazy. And then when you look at these, I break down these individual issues and you can literally see the problems in the issues and they're not, I don't want to say mistakes, but they're just, it's, these comics aren't made technically in a way that to me, shows somebody who understands the medium. This guy's been doing this for a really long time, and his name has cachet. It doesn't have what it used to have, nowhere near. I mean, I think it's fair to say he's kind of bombed at DC, and he's lost a lot of fans. I don't know what, a lot of readers. Maybe it's just the Marvel zombies didn't want to follow him over, but his titles have at DC have not been selling well. And you know, the penny pinchers at AT&T aren't happy. They're not getting their quote unquote money's worth from him. But to see these sort of fundamental mistakes in dialogue and kind of the lazy writing, and I mean, I guess he just figures I'm Bendis, so continuity doesn't matter. I don't care that the crime syndicate's dead. I'm just going to use them with no explanation for how they're back. Like, I don't know. It feels conceited in a way. Like he just doesn't care enough to make a good comic. Like he's just phoning it in. He wanted to write Superman, so he's writing Superman, and now he can kind of cross that off his bucket list. But he's not all in. The passion is missing, I guess, is what I would say. The passion to make something, you know, fresh and new. And maybe that sounds a little hypocritical, because I'm complaining about the fact that he's doing things with Lois and Clark and John that have never been done before, and so that should be fresh, right? Well, yeah, but not at the expense of the core of these characters. And I would say that aging John up, we've lost out on potentially years of story of John and his father bonding. And, you know, he ages him up just to put him in the Legion of Superheroes and actually separate his family. That is the worst, again, the worst thing to do. What he's done with Lois and Clark's relationship, I've talked so much about it. The way they act toward each other, the things they say, the things they do, is completely 180 degrees from what everybody has established before. It's not who these characters are. Lois would never, ever tell her father Superman and Clark Kent are the one and the same. She would never betray her husband that way and give away his biggest secret without talking to him first. She just wouldn't do it, period. Nothing in the history of Lois Lane suggests that she ever would. Nothing in the history of Superman or Clark and his love for Lois ever hints at the fact that they would be leading these sort of separate lives that's been hinted at. Like, you know, you do your thing, I'll do my thing, we'll get together when we can. What the F is that? No, I'm not buying it. This issue is just emblematic of the problems with his run. He's just doing whatever he wants, even though it doesn't make any sense. And even if you just want to throw that out, like throw out all the continuity, throw out anything that's come before, let's just read this as, hey, Bendis created this character called Superman, and he's going to tell this story about Superman, his unpowered wife, and their son, and this is what happened. Even then, it's not good because the dialogue is still clunky, and the art is inconsistent. So, you know, even throwing out all the problems I have with it in terms of how it ties into the rest of DC, even on its own, it's average at best. So I can't, you know, recommend that anybody read this stuff. And obviously Bendis's run on Superman almost over. So there's that to look at. And I guess we'll look for better days ahead. So anyway, sorry guys, I normally don't like to even talk about books that I dislike this much, but you know, it's Superman Sunday, and I committed to covering the whole Bendis run, and we'll definitely get through it. I haven't covered one of these, haven't talked about a Bendis Superman in a long time, for exactly this reason, because I don't want to talk about them because they're not any good. I hate to come on and rant and rave and talk about how terrible they are, but there wasn't anything redeeming in this one. So most of the time I can find something cool to talk about that, it was bad, but at least this. But right from the start with the crazy hallucination that just made no sense, didn't tie into anything. And even at the time this came out, when maybe you thought, okay, it's going to tie into something eventually in Bendis's run, spoiler alert, it never does. It never does. Here I am, you know, 20 issues later, and nothing was ever done about that world peace day. It didn't mean anything. It was just literally a waste of pages. Why, Bendis? Why? Why? I beg of you, tell me why. I don't understand. Anyway, that's enough ranting and raving about how bad Bendis's Superman number 9 was. So once again, I want to thank everybody for listening. Appreciate the support as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.